Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the misadventure of Masonic Effects. How are you? Glad to have you sitting in with us again today. Don't we ever need a time to catch our breath, even with Masonic effects? Yeah, it's we find ourselves holding the world at arm's length just for a moment to get a sense of perspective again, refresh it, sharpen the edge. It's fascinating that we do this. It's fascinating that we are hurling around, and we bump into so many situations out of all of those encounters, all those that phenomena, each one of us filters out how it impacts on us and what it means. It's pretty amazing. There's still things that go on around us that we don't quite understand, but we do. Apart from the jingoism and all of the, you know, self-serving kinds of comments, we live in these big, huge communities that no one truly controls. It's watching it as everything evolves and trying to make sense of it, trying to make sense that fits into, you know, a variety of structures and mindsets, ideas, ideologies, if you will. And we're good with that until we're not anymore. Until what's the term? We lose our confidence in one another, lose our tolerance certainly, and decide that we need a much more efficient option, and usually that means some form of conflict, massive scale, which is not only regrettable, but it tends to freshen the memory, doesn't it? Oh, that's why we keep an eye on the politics and make sure it doesn't get out of hand. And it seems about every 30 years we need a bit of a refresher. Maybe more often in some settings where there doesn't seem to be any let up in that. The idea that we would harm other people in order to assert a way of thinking or a mindset is curious. Of course, it sounds ridiculous if I'm coming from Eastern European history. It's pretty clear. The edges of our culture are always being impacted, and we're small, and so we have this sense that we need to protect what we have, and it's happened here in where I am, over in this big landmass over here. We have groups of people that want to protect a way of life, protect their community. And it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant to think that, because of the benefits, so many benefits for people around. But I guess some of us are always more tribal than others. We're going to try and declare that our tribe is, needs a common villain so we can strengthen our resolve. We don't really need that. Strengthen your resolve with your own. You're walking down the street, strengthen your resolve. Don't strengthen your resolve. That's perfectly fine. But so is everybody else, strengthening their resolve, bringing up their kids with the values and that they think is important to help them get through life. All of it is preparation. We don't prepare our children for life when we were children. I don't want to prepare a child for life in the 50s. That's moved on. They have their own lives. Please insert that. And the conditions around them will hopefully will be linked with the fundamental values. The fundamental values I'm seeing are included in the framework of the craft, but not necessarily exclusive to it. There's a lot of very, very good people in the world. Very, very many. Honorable and forthright people that don't choose to or don't become a Mason, and we acknowledge them. We have to. That's just obvious. I'm suffering here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm suffering under the delusion that I'm awake. This is one of those days, we signal the summer coming with the note of spring where I am. And, spring comes in like a lamb, like a lion, that saying. Well, here I'm it's cold weather. The snow is reminding us winter is still powerful. And yet the days are getting longer. And we know, I love the reminder, we know that spring and summer are just around the corner, as we like to say. Time is moving on, and I love that here where I am, we have that sense of anticipation, and there is a joy, there's a familiarity and a frankness about winter. It's cold and it's everything that it should be, but it's also something that happens. It's like it's here. This is nature. This is the way it is. This is the way the plants and animals prepare, and this is the way we live. No apology. No criticism. There's nothing wrong with winters. Is any problem that happens is that we haven't dressed for it. Mm-hmm. As much as we are doing well and pursuing our ideas, there are we note that the whole world doesn't live with the same uniformity. I know when you, I'm going to hear this from you. If I go down this road too far, you're going to be talking to me about, especially when you look out your window today, about Animal Farm, aren't you? Have we reached that? I don't know if it's as exactly a dystopian state of mind anymore. Not with some of the things really going on. But I very naively began thinking a while ago. I was sitting down with a late night and watching the news on the television. It occurred to me that I could have machine, instead of it being, you know, teaching and bring, you know, being a source of constant advertising and merchandising, it could be doing something to enhance quality of life for everybody. And I thought, oh my goodness, if only it would be, was an inspired source of education, wouldn't the world be a different place if that was the impact, instead of, you know, this sort of gun violence, and where particularly where I am, gun culture is very noticeable, unfortunately, for the people that are victimized by it. That part is unfortunate. But what if this was this could be curated and used as a source of information and knowledge and discussion? You know, if I can't be there with you in the room to discuss the various points, I can bear witness to a video of you having a discussion, having those discussions. And I can still, as if being a part of that audience, recalibrate my thinking or be influenced or not by the outcomes of your discussions. And then it occurred to me, just like it is to a lot of you, of course you can do that. Of course you can do that, man. And I do. There's social media outlets where I can be bounced around by clickbait, you know, process of telling me or teaching me that somebody else can decide where my attention ought to be rather than me, you know, for their own purposes, I'm sure. But I found that that's not necessarily the case. So when I realized that, I began studying and learning. It enhances my book work. And I can pinpoint some very, very lovely bits of work on history. Bits of history that I would probably never have, I can't imagine how I would have stumbled into it. Although my interest, my curiosity in Russian history came from meeting a very, very lovely, lovely professor of Russian history, who really did stimulate my interest in knowing more about this very, very remarkable group of people. That is enhanced. I can select whether I'm learning about the development of religions or philosophies or the philosophers' lives or the battles. I can learn, and I have refreshers. And just like real life, you know, it's claimed that all of our knowledge that we have absorbed is relearned, in a sense, about every 2 years. And we relearn it by using it in some way, So if we think, well, that's it. I have that vague notion. I know that, or I knew that. It's been some time. We can struggle to recall that, you know, use all the energy and vein popping thrust that we need to, or we can understand where the information is stored and how to, and teach ourselves how to retrieve it. Oh, it's changing the way we think about work with our children and how we prepare them for generations ahead. We know that this, some of the sort of classical education is still to be valued, and you and I are a testament to that, aren't we? All we need to do is start to apply ourselves to Freemasonry and try to do it with or without an understanding and an appreciation of the liberal arts. It's that part is a real self-education for the likes of me. The truths. I had a very lovely person explaining numerology to me the other day, and you know that I have difficulty. I can't do things just to go. I just don't have it to do things just because they have a bit of glamour attached to them. I just can't do that. I study things and learn things, and then I find out later that it fits under a framework of occult learning. And then when I find out what that really means, it's not as exciting as you might think. It's not like, raising Aleister Crowley from the dead. No, nothing so fantastical as that. It's still just a pursuit of knowledge, and in different frames, points in history, you and I know that new knowledge was uncontrolled knowledge, and that was considered a threat. And we could argue or suggest it hasn't changed to this day, and in some forms it hasn't, but in other ways we are, that search for knowledge, that search, the backstop of science is unstoppable. Where that will take us? Well, that gets around to the thesis that it began with, you know, where are we operating as individuals or are we operating as collective? Interesting, isn't it? And how much when we do, if I'm going to do that based on trust, well, I ought to first understand what it is that we're talking about. Is that in some way surrender? No. So the world, you know, does it make us any smarter? Now that's a nice cup of coffee. Does it make us any smarter knowing these things? Do we feel? I don't think anybody really cares. What matters is that you and I understand these processes. And how far I can't pursue your depth of knowledge without having a drive, without having a question. Just like you had a question, you had a need that was had to be satisfied. I absolutely enjoy that I can listen to and benefit from your researches because it opens the world to another facet, another way of thinking. I'm not really good with blinkers, not really, you know, that I have to, or with opinion. I don't think I've let myself succumb to that infirmity, that I've reached a certain point where there's too many ideas. In other words, I'm lazy, and so I'm going to make some assumptions here. I'm going to float out some ideological nonsense, and that's going to be my reasoning from this point on. In other words, you can't reason with me because I've decided to jump down a rabbit hole. I cannot think of anything more ridiculous not to surrender will and intellect to that kind of drivel. So today we're going to break the time space continuum here again. We're going to do that by taking a look at some pieces of history, snapshots, stereotypes, and lean in a little bit and study just a little bit. There's more. It's not exhaustive work. No, that's for other laboratories to be doing. And we're going to be soothed by our connection, our mathematical connection through music, and a little bit of a reminder of how the beauty and what's around us if we are fortunate enough to notice. I'm speaking, of course, about poetry. And we will tip into why poetry is important to our lives. I don't want to, for a long time, just jump in and, you know, talk about some of these remarkable people, very courageous people, and only occasionally be wondering about, musing about why poetry is important at all. It's like... Although I've heard people explain to me why higher learning is not important, why the classical arts is elitism, in other words, why uneducated people are every bit as prone to deep thoughts. However, I also know that thoughts take on a new freshness when there's a vocabulary attached to be able to articulate those ideas. Oof. That all came out right. So sit back today as I'm energizing myself with a bit of some lovely coffee here, and I'll be trying to absorb some energy from you as we go through the show. The narrative, the commentary today is called "A Proofing," and it's a pretty amazing. I think. Can you imagine a world before masonry? Oh, that would be like you and I before we walk through the door. Eh? Let's get into this. Not go in too many circles. Here's music that I love. You're a fan of Ben Webster, I hope by now. This is one of his, you know, standards. When I fall in love. Would you believe? Maybe this will reflect some of your ideas today. Maybe it will introduce you to some new, a new idea here or there. I call this commentary proofing. As we get to the end, maybe we we'll both rediscover why. Can you imagine a world before Freemasonry? I think it's hard, especially in a time of excess and indulgence, to always appreciate how groundbreaking Masonry was in the day when religious persecution was rampant and when despots flexing their muscle tried to define their values as our own. Over time, science prevailed. When it broke through, it was more a way of thought than a single event. We became instantly captured by the potential. Our best and brilliant minds sacrificed for the betterment of one and all, including the illiterate and disenfranchised. One segment of society that had advantage took on responsibility for another. Relationships were being redefined. Science helped us assign genius where it was found, not with the gentry. Mouth-to-ear teaching made it possible long before we had permissions from an artificial authority. One man trusting another to exchange secrets. We were ready to protect that link because we valued it. Even today, we find children of disadvantage achieving greatness, while some men continue to suppress them. By comparison, Masonic values and principles could easily fall into the too good to be true category. Maybe the reaction isn't entirely cynical. Maybe it's skepticism about something that doesn't happen in real life. We claim we're all that, and so it is up to us to pick up that responsibility and act on them, on those values. Me, I like the personal touch. I like caring for somebody local, knowing just caring makes a difference. Do I expect reciprocity of this largesse? To bow and acknowledge? Hell no. That would rob them and me of dignity. We can celebrate the reputation of the craft is built on ideals beyond our grasp, but what we strive to achieve. We go after the impossible. Is it feeding and sheltering a family of outcasts? Is it treating lost souls with dignity? Is it sharing our benefits? A good man could do that, right? Right? sort of has that 60s feel to it, doesn't it? Paul Desmond. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've been writing and thinking more about our history as the Guild, particularly I'm aware of what happened when we gave up, in a way, when we gave up our oral history. The intimacy of those conversations was something we understand in a way, but we can't quite figure out if we can recapture it without using the same old-fashioned tools. You know, like the shipbuilder. Do you get out all of the tools that the old shipbuilders did? Anybody that's worked around sailboats would tell you there's artistry involved. It's not just engineering. Not just. There's artistry involved. That line that you see that's so beautiful, that didn't just happen. There was a lot we gave up with oral history, and it's important to hear from that I bring this up and explain this connection, because in this part of the program, we're talking about poetry, poets and poetry. And as I often say, we're leaning into the detail. Now, poetry can reflect or can expose, put new ideas in front of us. But I think these observations, I'm going to read to you some observations that comes from a really interesting website. It's just simply called Read Poetry, and I find it just it really ticks off a lot of the boxes for the likes of me. Poetry helps us remember. Poetry began as an oral history, which may be why I'm particularly drawn to it. Before writing was widely accessible, it served as a way to help people pass down stories and information. On a practical level, rhythm and rhyme help the human brain remember things more easily. Reading poetry with children is popular for just that reason. It can help children remember important lessons and teach them about language. However, poetry also helps us remember history more broadly. When poets record important events in their lives, and in the world at large, they are capturing an essential piece of the human experience, one that can and will transcend time and make an impact for generations. Poetry increases empathy. Expressing ideas and feelings are central to the nature of poetry. Whether we are reading or writing poetry, the act is an invitation to feel deeply and fully. Studies show that reading poetry regularly can help people increase their empathy. Often it is also an invitation for us to understand perspectives and experiences different from our own. Can help people bridge cultural gaps, age differences, economic inequality, and other social issues. Start. Poem today. This is from the work of C.S. Lewis. Yes, that's C.S. Lewis, the one that nominated his friend J.R.R. Tolkien for a Nobel Prize. Only to have Tolkien lose it to Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath. Oh, well, that's to be honest, that style of writing that, you know, that's become sort of the root of fantasy writing didn't really exist. It wasn't widely understood or read back in the day, back in, you know, the 1920s, 1930s. It wasn't. So, Phil, when you heard Tolkien's work, it was hard not to recognize the genius behind it. Eh? Here's from that study group, and I use the term as loosely as you and I would when we're getting together. We need no excuse to be wanting to get together to share notes and our progresses. That's wonderful. That's an absolute joy. So here, this is C.S. Lewis, one of the Inklings, one of that group at Oxford, I think, in praise of solid people. I don't know how much of this will get through. It's a bunch of stanzas, but I'm not troubled about it, but you know, what do you pick up from this from Lewis's work? Thank God that there are solid folk. And as an aside, I'll say amen to that. Solid folk who water flowers and roll the lawn and sit and sew and talk and smoke and snore all through the summer dawn. Good times, eh? Who pass untroubled nights and days, full fed and sleepily content, rejoicing in each other's praise, respectable and innocent. Who feel the things that all men feel and think in well-worn grooves of thought. Whose honest spirits never reel before man's mystery overwrought. Yet not unfaithful or unkind with workday virtues surely stayed. Theirs is the sane and humble mind and dull affections undismayed. Oh, happy people I have seen, no verse yet written in your praise. And, truth to tell, the time has been I would have scorned your easy ways. But now, through weariness and strife, I learn your worthiness indeed. The world is better for such life as stout suburban people lead. Too often have I sat alone, when the wet night falls heavily and fretting winds round me moan and homeless longing vexes me. For lore that I shall never know and visions none can hope to see till brooding works upon me so a childish fear steals over me. I look round the empty room, the clock still ticking in its place, and all else silent as the tomb, till suddenly I think a face grows from the darkness just beside. I turn and lo, it fades away, and soon another phantom tide or shifting dreams begins to play, and dusky galleries past me sail, full freighted on a fairy sea. I hear the silken merchants hail across the ringing waves to me. Then suddenly again the room, familiar books about me piled, and I amid the gloom by one more mocking dream beguiled, and still no nearer to the light, and still no further from myself, alone and lost in clinging night, the clock still ticking on the shelf. And then do I envy solid folk who sit of evenings by the fire, after their work and doze and smoke, and are not fretted by desire. That works. Oral history. That's the first sunset. Beautiful. Beautiful work. What if I told you that history, even in the smallest turn of a phrase, can change an entire way of thinking for us? Well, I'm going to try and expose a bit of this to you and for you today, and then you tell me, have we done anything? And if I'm successful, apply it to your local history, to your life, this kind of thinking. If I'm not going to say it's a given here, it's an attempt. We read here and we learn that poetry can open up a different way of thinking. Our old world style of doing things through an oral history, a lot of it is still quite prevalent. That notion of oral history is still prevalent in Masonry. And I think we will likely become more excited about recapturing that as we, over the next 5 to 10 years, I think, because it has some, you know, real strong appeal. It's not the answer for everything, but it does appeal. Here, tell me what you think about this. It's about Masonry embracing us in a more cosmopolitan way of thinking. Can a simple man, a natural man, a man who walks out and lives and works with the seasons and with the nature, like a farmer does. Now, before we get over romantic or romanticized about that or sentimental about it, it's one frame of mind. There are many, many others. Is something lost when along comes Masonry that sweeps us up into a more cosmopolitan frame of mind, reasoning, understanding, enlightenment. Along with the Masonic temple, a new deity could be invoked. Among the achievements upon which the Enlightenment rested had been the new scientific cosmology. Freemasonry turned the vast and ordered universe of the new science and its grand architect into an object of worship. With that cosmology came the justification for being cosmopolitan. The universe, as discovered by European exploration and by the new science, stretched before only those who could appreciate the implications of its vastness and knowability. The cosmopolitanism preached by the Enlightenment, it was claimed by the orators, encouraged fraternal bonding. Huh. So we weren't expanding out and away from each other, hey? I raise that as a question. The cosmopolitan ideal was frequently evoked among men who were less rooted in their local environment. Hence, for example, among military men, who often had their own lodges. Their wanderings in the service of the state could be justified, ironically, by their being cosmopolitics. Are we not members of the same family? Is the universe not the country to the Masonic? Asked a military orator on the eve of the garrison's departure. He concluded somewhat ironically with a nationalist and monarchist salute to Louis XVI. An orator in Liège could simultaneously praise Joseph II for his cosmopolitan vision and then remark that the glory of Joseph II is his own, and the glory of Louis XIV was only the result of circumstances. The Masonic vision wanted a European cosmopolitanism that would not interfere with national identity or monarchical glory. Identification with the nation appears quite early in Masonic rhetoric, and it was evoked most frequently and simultaneously with cosmopolitanism. In quote, the earth itself is only a great republic of which each nation is a family and each particular a child. Within this rhetoric, brotherhood took on a new meaning. The family became a metaphor for society and the nation. Simultaneously, the social became identified with the domestic and consanguineous. Within the new conceptualization of the social universe, brotherhood came to denote devotion to one's country, society, and by extension, the nation, overshadowed and thus transformed the metaphors that describe the traditional family, and most especially, the traditional father. Well, thank you. Can we? Does that speak to you? Does that sense of cosmopolitanism, our study of the cosmology, what does, in a way, that it makes sense, doesn't it? It makes sense that from me in my small parochial existence, I can be exposed, I am exposed to ideas that I can or that I may select to that I'm encouraged to absorb a broader fraternal network. Is that even possible? Huh. Thank you. You know, I think our masonry really does well when we have that sense of oral history about us. We may, in a lot of ways, be modern, but within the craft, there is something about that connection between us. We can look at the work, the oral history that's exchanged by the scholars, and we can marvel at it. We can benefit and learn tremendous amounts, as I think we ought. I think we're obligated to do that. That a sense that comes through loud and clear when we're listening to music, particularly the music that endures, classical music, and particularly when we embrace the liberal arts, oral history comes through, and poetry, of course. These are reflections, reminders, if you will. But that movement, you know, think about that movement from where we are to a more cosmopolitan way of thinking. Wherever we begin, that's the starting point. But you and I know that some men, when they start out in life, they dig themselves into a hole. When the starting gun goes off, they're at a disadvantage before we even start. So for them, we need to give them a help up out of that hole so that they have a sense of equality. Now, when you're in the hole, life can be real bitter, and people with that aren't in the hole can seem to be quite privileged. And you'll hear that. These are fellows that will remind us. They'll be struggling with notions of higher education and self-improvement. They'll be inclined in a way to be aggrandizing mediocrity in a way, their own status. Now, if we're looking at masonry broadly as the adventure of expanding our thinking to a more cosmopolitan way of understanding the world, then I guess it's a bit unfair to say that our starting point is mediocrity. It is what it is. And he will do that, and maybe, and perhaps it will struggle to see the benefit of anything beyond his own experience. Enlightenment does that for us, doesn't it? Is that one of the relics that we have forgotten? I know that masonry will. It's appealing to dilettantes and competitors. There's some sense of edge to it, isn't there? The actual work of epistemology certainly doesn't, you know, that's not going to necessarily start the heart racing until you're so well into it that the discoveries in your laboratory are so self-satisfying. That takes a while. So we need to be prepared for those fellas to be attracted to masonry. Ought we to help them get their feet on the ground? If they ask, ought we to be part of that process of exploration? If they ask, if they can overcome their own sense of confusion, of isolation, You know, those are my words. What comes next is that some do, many do not. But to be harsh and blame that on the craft, I think is just that. I think that's where we seem to be most confused. When something doesn't work out according to the ideals or the framework, then that is a problem that we place on the shoulders of masonry. Except the evidence doesn't really take us in that direction. And thus, Masonic effects. Well, there's a little bit more to that, you know. Being able to reach out to people in their own comfort as they relax with a nice dram of whatever or that wonderful cup of espresso. I like the Turkish, you know, where you have that sweet and that cardamom. Oh, my. Sorry. There. Let's get over this show. Let's get through this show and do that for ourselves. Wherever you are and whatever time of day it is that you're taking this in, you'll be able to relate to what I'm talking about. Oral history, how it affects you. We don't do these things every minute of every day. That type of piety scares the hell out of me. I try to avoid those guys. There's always somebody that's going to be able to out-pious me. yes, but they never did make much sense to me. But it was that evangelical zeal that burned that bridge a long, long, long time ago. Now, you know, I'm talking about forces and influences. Not Santa Claus giving me favors if I'm devout. None of that. No. I kind of like nature, you know, and I'm quite amazed by the universe and my small place in it. So come back. This conversation, I fear to say, this conversation's not over. Oh, the conversation, you know, the whole program is designed around conversation. You just fill in the other part. I wait for that, you know, wait for your response. And it comes. Find the joy. I hope you'll find the simplicity that masonry offers. But don't be all grumpy and keep it to yourself. Share it. Share it with your manner of speech, because you need to hear this. You need to hear these ideas reinforced instead of the bleakness of life, and tell you, be judgmental here about yourself. Or tell me if you are the skeptic or the cynic or it makes a difference, and it would to you to be aware of your own thought processes. Do you, when you walk in the room, look for the flaw? When you meet people, do you look for the shortcoming? I think we all do in some ways, unless we walk out with that, and I call it a Masonic mindset. I think it's probably something more expansive than that. The embrace. You know, we're all in it together. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, but man, we need them. We have to prepare for what's coming ahead of us here in the developed world. The pendulum has swung over where we apparently need to remind ourselves of how ugly things can get if we aren't clear about our values. So we're going through that again, and history seems to tell us what happens to not only to the world around us when we begin to doubt, but what happens to a brotherhood that sometimes has to go to ground just to survive it. Come back next week. We'll pick this up. It'll be your round next time. And to listeners in Turkey and and China, for whatever your motivation, in Japan, in New Zealand, in Pakistan, in the Sudan, in Zambia, in Oman, in Latvia, in Ireland, in Britain, and I'm forgetting so many others. Thanks for tuning in. Look forward to being with you again.